Have you guys ever tried explaining football to a little kid? It's almost impossible to make it make sense. I've got two kids myself, and they're always like, Dad, what's this thing on TV for your work? When can we watch some Paw Patrol? Well, meet Future Fans, an innovative brand that helps little kids become big fans by embedding the rules of football into parallel games and activities. The way they teach is super unique and effective. As an example, they have this beanbag toss game with four tries to teach downs in football. I tried it with my kids. They love it. And later they connect those games back to the sport itself through a storybook. Seriously, check out the reviews on this thing. They have 4.9 stars on Amazon. Imagine your kid asking to watch on Sundays with you or being right there alongside you for all the ups and downs with your favorite team. That's what dreams are made of right there. And Future Fans exists to make that a reality. If you want your kid to understand football, Future Fans is for you. And it's only $49.99 right now. Use the code MMQB at futurefans.com to get 10% off and unlock a lifetime of memories starting now. That's $49.99. Use the code MMQB at futurefans.com.
For some, the sea is not a place. It is a calling, a home away from home. If you find yourself drawn to the water, we can take you there. Imagine you, your friends, and family on a private yacht in the most beautiful places in the world, from the Bahamas or the Virgin Islands to Greece, Italy, Tahiti, and beyond. This is a yacht charter vacation with the Moorings, and it's easier than you think. Inquire today. Your next great vacation begins at moorings.com.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL podcast. I'm Connor Orr, Albert Breer is here. Sleepless night last night as the final Sunday of the NFL season has come and gone. Black Monday is upon us. This is a recording this at 10:35 on Monday morning. So this is an old school Black Monday. There's a lot going on. Overnight, Arthur Smith was let go as head coach of the Falcons. This morning, Ron Rivera, as expected, let go as head coach of the Commanders. Scott Fitter, the GM of the Panthers, also let go. Not sure why they waited, 3 weeks between getting rid of Frank Reich and doing this, but so it goes. And so that's
interesting, too, because it's like I feel like Black Monday sort of changed, right? Like it used to be that you'd be sort of like wrapped up with the firings by noon, but like there'd be like five or six of them, and now it just feels like more of these are happening either in season or on Sunday night, right?
Yeah.
Like I was sitting on a TV set when the Arthur Smith thing happened last night, which was at, I believe, 12:01. So technically that was a Monday firing, I guess, but for all intents and purposes, a Sunday night firing where they fly home, have a meeting, and then do it. This morning did have a little bit more of an old school feel because there have been a couple, I feel like, where it was almost like nothing happened on the Monday morning, you know?
Yeah. So let's start in Atlanta because I do think that that is the most interesting situation. It was my understanding that, 2 weeks ago, Art was on not solid ground, but okay ground, I would say packed muddy dirt. Like it wasn't super solid, but it was good. And then really what he had to do was hold the fort for the last 2 weeks, get into the off season with some good vibes, win maybe one or two of those last games. And instead you get blown out by the Bears and you get blown out by the Saints. Now, what happens at the end of the Saints game is that the Saints line up in victory formation. And then Jameis Winston, makes what he calls an offensive decision and hands the ball off to Jamal
Williams.
Executive
decision. I think he was like searching for executive decision probably. But
maybe a little sidetrack.
Wait,
you have to watch
or, offensive.
He said offensive. He said offensive decision. But the
which
way
is spelled
they
the
said
same
it,
as offensive.
Yeah. So you have to go back and watch the interview with Jameis because he talks in a way like if I was Dennis Allen, I'd be horrified. He goes. He says it with like such assurance, and he's like, "Yeah, Dennis told us to kneel down, but we made the decision to, And you're just like, "That's not. There is no other person that's allowed to make that decision." Like he's saying it like it was a totally normal thing. He's like, "Yeah, no, we decided."
The best part is, have you seen that his teammates have come out to get Jameis's back on this?
Yeah,
Like Jonathan Abram, the safety, like who wasn't even in, plays
wasn't
defense,
even on the field. Yeah.
Like he said, like there's no teammate I'd rather have than Jameis. It's great because he's got like full backing from the locker room on it too.
I will say, and before
although
we get,
Jamal Williams is like by all accounts and was this in Detroit too, like a phenomenal guy,
one
right?
of the most beloved teammates in the NFL. I totally agree. Right.
Yeah.
You can see the look in Jameis's face, though. The gears turn just a little bit when someone goes, do you think getting Jamal Williams in the end zone on a fake victory formation was worth forever stoking this rivalry? Like, do you know how pissed the Falcons are going to be every time you play them from here on out? And like,
and this is like sort of an underrated rivalry too. Like,
yeah, it's a hot rivalry.
They like actually don't. These franchises actually hate each other. They really don't like each other.
Yeah. And then like for a second he's like, oh shit. But then he just, it's full Jameis. He's just like, yeah, no, total team decision. We were all, like, everyone except for the head coach was totally on board with this.
He did call it a team decision, right?
Yeah. Well, it was like, I think he said unanimous offensive decision, which was so funny. Like there is some sort of,
in the huddle?
Like there's some sort of voting protocol, like in the Saints rule book, where it's like the head coach can tell you something, but then there's also in the instance where you don't agree with the head coach, there's the unanimous offensive decision bylaw that you can somehow abide by.
We need to get like Larry Holder or Catherine Terrell or Nick Underhill to write like a 3,000-word like oral history on how this decision came to be. I would 100% read it.
Absolutely bonkers. So anyway, Arthur Smith, who basically couldn't blow these last two games, then he comes storming to midfield for the coaching handshake, and you can see it's very clear what he says, like
with like a Jim Harbaugh type energy.
Like, what the F was that? What the F are you doing? And Dennis Allen.
At that point, and I think we should all, like, we should kind of remember where we all were at this point, because when this happened, we had no idea what Jameis had done.
We didn't know. Yeah.
And neither did Arthur.
No. And so, you know, Dennis Allen doesn't know. Like, Dennis Allen's doing the post-game handshake. He doesn't know. And so he's going to midfield, and he's like, and I've since kind of gone back and I did a little reporting on this, but like Dennis is apologizing on his way to midfield. Like, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. And Art is like, why would you do that? And, you know, I will say this, if Arthur Blank fired Arthur Smith because he lost two games and then flipped out at Dennis Allen, that's a dumb reason to
fire
someone.
That's ridiculous.
Because
yeah.
Arthur Smith had every right to flip out at Dennis Allen. You don't line up in the victory formation and then punch in a score. That
right.
is a
like,
declaration of war.
It's also like, I mean, it's sticking up for your players. You know what I mean? Like, I'd actually almost view it as a positive the way that Arthur came at DA. And again, like, DA had nothing to do with the actual decision. It was, well, I was going to say it was all Jameis, but apparently it wasn't, because some sort of poll
was taken. Unanimous offensive decision,
yeah.
Which is just the funniest thing ever.
I think if you're a Falcons player, you would look at that as Arthur Smith taking up for you. So I don't have a problem with Arthur Smith's handling of it. And like, this is why I'm going to borrow Seth Wickersham's term. This is why like, people refer to these teams as being run like billion-dollar lemonade stands, right?
Yeah.
If that's why this happened. Now, I don't think that's exactly it. Based on what I've heard, I think this is more Arthur Smith Arthur Blank over the last couple of weeks was at least sniffing around, calling around on taking a big swing.
Yes.
Whether it's Bill Belichick or Jim Harbaugh. And I wrote it on Friday, like, there could be a big swing coming here. And I think when you start to go down the road in doing something like that and investigating something like that, as you get further and further down that road, it becomes harder and harder to go back. And then you have the two losses, and neither of them looked good in any way. And maybe you add that up and, you know, it's okay, we're going to take our big swing and we're going to go all in now, rather than like, let's see if we can connect on that big swing. And then if not, we will kind of put the toothpaste back in the tube and go with Arthur Smith.
Right. So that's that was my takeaway this, you know, when I wrote about it at whatever that was, 12:30 at night last night. The hours are starting to blur together. You especially given the market as it is right now, you can't you got to land it now. You can't move on from Art Smith unless you are confident that you are hitting a home run. And at this point, a home run is Jim Harbaugh or Bill Belichick. That's it. You know, maybe Ben Johnson. I don't necessarily know if the Falcons would be in the top few choices for him. I don't know, you know, but you wouldn't move on from a hot offensive coordinator candidate to just sign another hot offensive coordinator candidate, because you're still in that degree of that, you're still in that gray area. And so the only two guys that offer you any semblance of a guaranteed upgrade are Bill Belichick and Jim Harbaugh. And so
I think Connor, the other thing that we shouldn't ignore, and I think this is always a factor, is the owner's age.
Yep.
And that he's 81 years old, and that this, you know, he doesn't have five more hires to get this right. And they've been close, and they knocked on the door under Dan Quinn, and he was patient with Arthur Smith and Terry Fontenot. And that place needed a rebuild. The cap was a mess. Dan Quinn and Thomas Dimitroff had a lot of success together. Thomas Dimitroff had success with Mike Smith. But at the end, they had leveraged things to try to get the most out of what was left of that group that was sort of headed by Matt Ryan. And the cap had to be completely untangled. And so it was always going to take some time to get themselves out of that. And I think that they did a nice job. Arthur and Terry Fontenot, who's still the general manager, did a nice job of getting them out of that. But now you're not looking at another 5-year plan. Now you're looking at, all right, we have the team in place. We need to go get a quarterback. We need a coach who's going to be able to attract the quarterback. And we need to go for it right now. And you don't do that I don't even think you even do that by hiring a Ben Johnson, you know, because again, Arthur Blank has hired, I think, 5 head coaches, right? And 4 of them were along the lines of an Arthur Smith, an assistant, right? Somebody else's assistant. Mike Smith was older, but Jim Mora and Dan Quinn and Arthur Smith all fit that rising young assistant profile. And Bobby Petrino was the one outlier. But I do think you look at that and it's okay, if you're doing this, you're doing it to do something different. And that's to bring in a guy who has more experience, where you're doing less projecting somebody into a role.
Yeah. I will say this, and this is kind of my last note on the Falcons job, and we'll move on. If it is Bill Belichick, and I'm not saying, you know, Bill Belichick is obviously the greatest defensive mind in the sport. However, the bright spot of the Falcons this year was Ryan Nielsen, who is one of the better young defensive coordinators in the NFL. Yeah. And so I'm curious, you know.
Well, but that's the thing, though, Connor. Is if you're going to hire a Belichick or Harbaugh, you're not doing it and saying, yeah, you got to keep these guys.
No, I'm not saying that, but it's if you're piecing together the strengths of the team, it's Ryan Nielsen, probably in his second year, what are they, probably the 10th best defense in the NFL, could get you up to 5th. And then, okay, New England's 3rd. So you're moving up 2, basically. Yeah. But my other thought here is, what's going to, if you're Arthur Blank, are you going to, you know, and Bill Belichick's oh, cool, perfect. All right, Matt Patricia and Josh McDaniels, super friends, let's go. Hold on a second. Is there a caveat here? And I'm very curious to see how all this works. Staffing, you know, what is Bill going to be allowed to do? I mean, and I have all the respect in the world for Josh McDaniels and Matt Patricia, but there is a sample size at this point that would lead a lot of fans to believe it's not going to be a slam dunk to be I'm bringing the super friends with me. I think a lot of people would be no, that's not going to happen. And Bill's so connected. Every good offensive coach in the league that you talk to is talking to Bill Belichick. He knows all these guys.
I mean, I think the comp has to be Andy Reid, right? And so I don't think Andy Reid you have to remember, like, it was 10 years ago now, or 11 years ago now, that Andy Reid went to Kansas City. And, like, it's funny to think back to that hiring cycle, because Chip Kelly was sort of the big prize. Like, believe it or not, like, anybody who doesn't remember this, Chip Kelly was a hotter name than Andy Reid. Getting Chip Kelly to Philly was a bigger deal than getting Andy Reid to Kansas City at the time. And, you know, like, I think getting fired to Philly forced Andy to, like, reevaluate some things. And he was willing to cede some control over personnel. He actually came to the determination himself, like, I don't want to be as intimately involved in scouting as I was in Philly. I just want to coach. And yeah, he's been involved in decision-making there, the big box decision-making, but like, he's hired and kind of farmed out some of the responsibility he had in Philly. And then when it came to hiring staff, you know, he hired Bob Sutton, who'd worked under Rex Ryan, I believe, with the Jets, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
To run his defense. And then Doug Peterson, who wasn't his offensive coordinator in Philly, who was sort of a rising young assistant there. So he did lean on his connections, but he reimagined some things. And I think that that's what you would be looking for from Bill. Bill has an idea of how he wants to run a place. I think you would just ask of him, I want you to go through a thorough process in how you're going to put together the staff. And if that means you land on, you know, McDaniels or O'Brien or Patricia or whoever else, fine. But I don't want this just to be a Patriots reboot. I want you to reimagine what you're doing, because obviously the last couple of years it didn't work nearly as efficiently as it had, you know, from 2000 to 2019.
Yeah. So at this point, I mean, I think we're in lockstep here. I think it's got to be either Belichick or Harbaugh. Like, I really do. And yeah. I mean, there can be, you know, it's funny, the top defense, you know, the other slam dunk coaching hire, really, based on the assistants that are available this year, is Dan Quinn. And, you know, two of the top defensive candidates on the market are Dan Quinn and Raheem Morris, the former head coach and interim head coach of the Falcons. Yep. So we know they're not going there, but we'll see what happens there. The Commanders, moving on from Ron Rivera, they're hustling this morning. So they've already hired the former Warriors GM. They've gone full Browns. They've got slips in, I think, for Ben Johnson as of the taping of this. Ben Johnson, Aaron Glenn. So they're hitting the ground running. I don't know if you saw this yesterday, but Adam Schefter was doing the safe and not safe thing on ESPN, and he was like, they're not going to fire Ron Rivera because it's his birthday. Did you see that?
Yeah, I did see that. Yeah.
It's like, what an amazing, like, I hope that we all have that kind of immunity. I just don't fire anyone on their birthday. You know, I mean, well, how old is Ron Rivera? Do you think he cares about his birthday at this point?
I mean, I don't know, man. Like, I'm in my 40s and I like legitimately don't want people to know when my birthday is.
He just turned 62. So it's not a Hallmark birthday.
Do you tell anybody when your birthday is?
No. And I mean, and like, the best part,
I legit don't want people, like, it's like, I don't want people coming up to me and wishing me a happy birthday. I don't know. Like, it's a weird thing, definitely.
Are you, wow. You have a Wikipedia page?
Yeah, yeah.
Holy smokes.
I have nothing to do with that, and there's probably some bad stuff on there. I know that anybody can edit it, right?
Yeah. Oh, I know when your birthday is. So I wanted to see, I'm not going to say it. But yeah. All I'm saying is someone's got a birthday soon. But anyway. Ron Rivera had, you know, not a Hallmark birthday, but he's immune to being fired. So good for him. Nobody wants to get fired on their birthday. I my takeaway from that firing was, I give Ron Rivera a lot of credit, and I don't think he will, like, I think he can go do whatever he wants now. I think he can still be a very good defensive coordinator. He had two top 10 seasons in 4 years with Washington. I think he could go into TV. I think he'd be great at TV. I think he could still play linebacker for the Eagles. Like, he's in great shape.
The age of some of their players on defense, right?
Yeah. Him and Fletcher Cox, you know, they'll be all right together.
I think, like, I could actually see him. You know, this is interesting because he had a relationship with the guy, but, you know, John Madden was sort of had become a resource for the league, you know, and kind of like a, I don't know, like a father figure for coaches. And, you know, Andy Reid has sort of taken on that role a little bit. I could see Ron sort of moving into something like that, where, you know, he's been a head coach at two different places. He, you know, got a team to the Super Bowl. And as a guy who, you know, it was an assistant coach for a long time, a head coach for a long time, and then obviously a player before that and played on one of the most storied defenses of all time, like, he could be a great resource for the NFL, you know, and like kind of be a guy to consult on rules and how you set things up and hiring and all of that stuff. Like, I sort of look at Ron as that guy. Like, if he is ready to kind of take a step back, and he's a little older now, then I think he could be a great resource for the sport, you know? And so look, I think he deserves a lot of credit too for just everything that he had to endure the last 4 years and kind of
becoming... He coached the team through a congressional investigation.
Right. And through the name change and the... And all the stuff. I mean, the bleep hit the fan almost right away when he became the head coach. You know what I mean? Like, almost right away. And, you know, I know there are a lot of people that probably wouldn't have handled everything that Ron went through. In addition to his own personal situation, which is we haven't even touched on as well as he did. And,
right.
You know, I'm glad that he gets to go out with some modicum of grace here in class. And I think the birthday jokes aside, I think the fact that, like, you know, like, they're, you know, he gets to meet with the team on Monday morning, which doesn't always happen, and say goodbye to them, I think is the right way to have it handled.
No doubt. I mean, he had to be the adult in the room there for a long time. He had to be the adult in the room in Carolina for a long time, you know, based on kind of who he was coaching down there. But I think pivoting to what the Commanders are going to do.
Yeah, like, you think about me, not to interrupt you, Connor, but he was there. He was the coach for the Jerry Richardson situation, too.
The Jerry Richardson situation.
I mean, if the other thing he could do is write a book, because he probably has some pretty incredible stories.
If you're listening, Ron, I don't charge a lot to be a ghostwriter. First one's free. Thinking about where Washington's going to go, I think this is a cool moment for Commanders fans, because the Rivera hire was specifically made to almost like put a statue outside the building and be like, look, we have someone who knows what they're doing. And now they can kind of dream a little bit. Like, this is a hire where it's like, oh, we can go get, like, for the first time, we can go get the hot play caller, and he might want to come here. You know what I mean? Like, they can, I think Ben Johnson is on the list. I mean, they did request him. We said that. I think that's a job that Ben Johnson might take. Yeah. I think that that's a job that Mike McDonald might take. I think that they're going to have their pick of GM. You know, there's a lot of good candidates in that pool already. From my understanding, they've really narrowed down the pool already. I mean, this seems like a targeted, you know, let's hit the ground running. We know exactly what we want. And my dream scenario, Albert, is let's hire the great GM. Let's get the Warriors guy in there. Let's get the hot offensive assistant or defensive assistant. And then let's change the damn name. And we go into 2024 as the Red Wolves. Woo!
I, from what I've heard, they've been looking like more intently at models and kind of the way they're going to set it up.
Baltimore and Philly.
Right. And so, like, I think what's interesting about this, if you're a candidate, is the chance to help to shape that. Now, like, look, like, I feel like every new owner that comes in is like, we're going to be the Microsoft or the Apple of the NFL. You know what I mean? Like, and more often than not, that ends really, really poorly. And, you know, Jimmy Haslam stumbled around with that for however many years before he got it right. Right. David Tepper still can't get out of his own way with that whole thing. So there's generally a learning process with a new owner before he figures out the right way to do it and how he, like, and how he's going to kind of meld football norms with new ideas. But, you know, Josh Harris is interesting in that he has already, like, made his mistakes with the Sixers and Devils, and so comes in with some ownership experience and is bringing in Rick Spielman to help him, who has a ton of experience working in NFL front offices. And so I'm fascinated to see the way this works. Like somebody had mentioned over the weekend when I was talking, I think it was a coaching agent I was talking with, brought up like the Chicago Cubs and how the Cubs, when they hired Theo Epstein, had sort of reinvented like the way that a baseball front office looks. And it was like a general, like, so, you know, Theo, I think, came in as the president of baseball operations. And then the GM was actually underneath him and reporting to him. And he was an over the top guy who kind of would meld what the manager wanted with what the GM wanted. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if this one winds up looking like that, you know. And the president of football ops job is going to be almost as interesting to me as the head coach job. And the order in which they hire into those jobs, I think, is going to be really interesting. And whether or not Rick Spielman winds up being a candidate for the president of football ops job is interesting. I just think the whole thing is fascinating. And I can't wait to see how this one plays out because, you know, on paper, they have a second pick in the draft. They have a clean salary cap. They have, I think it's what, 5 picks in the first 3 rounds, right? Is that it? A couple really high second round picks. It's a good job, you know. Like, if you want Drake May, he's yours. You know what I mean? Like, there's like little things about the job like that, and that's not even a little thing, but there's things about the job like that in addition to the idea of kind of having this blank slate of a franchise to work with.
Yeah, you're picking 36, 40, 67, 100, 102, 137. So even pretty your good. Fifth round pick is, I mean, if your third round or your fifth round pick is in the top 140. So yeah, I mean, that's absolutely fantastic.
And you have some building blocks. Like for a young, normally like young quarterbacks come into broken situations, right? Like the young quarterback here is going to be walking into a team that has like an improving offensive line. It's not there yet, but an improving offensive line. Terry McLaurin, Jahan Dotson, Brian Robinson, like there's pieces there. Their interior defensive linemen are there. You know, they traded the edge guys, but it's just there's something to build on there.
Yeah, I mean Sam Cosmi. You know there's some a lot. You know, some of these guys have been drafted recently. You know, and so yeah, you're gonna have some good pieces here. The defense got gutted a little bit, but the defensive interior is still really good. You know, I think that there's some, you know, we'll see what Emmanuel Forbes becomes. It wasn't the best rookie season, and I think he was just as vulnerable in run defense as we all thought he was going to be at 160 pounds. But, you know, these things change and they develop over time. But yeah, I want that job if I'm a head coach. And you know, you're going to get facility upgrades. You're eventually going to get a new stadium if you can hang on.
Probably
to that
a new
job.
Practice facility.
New
too.
Practice facility. You got to overcome that. I went back because I was writing about Rivera, and I went back to the NFLPA survey where, you know, for those of you who don't know, the NFL Players Association did an anonymous survey where they had players rank the teams on a bunch of different categories, and not surprisingly, gang, the Commanders finished last. They were 32nd out of 32, which is hard to beat the Cardinals, who were charging for to-go meals.
Hilarious because it was like all the attention was on the Cardinals and like whatever the floorboards coming up in the weight room. And,
yes.
And like you said, like having to pay for a cheeseburger after 5 p.m. And yet they weren't last.
Have you seen, by the way, so there was like a post on the Commander's website from like 2014 or whatever, where there's a slideshow of the weight room. You can pull it up. It's still on the internet. And it looks like the fitness center at a La Quinta Inn. Like it's like beige carpeting. There's like all these scuffed up, weight mats with like, and because there's the old logo on it still. So I know that's from
one rack of dumbbells.
Yeah. It's just like,
don't go up above 50 pounds.
Yeah. Just put two of them in your hand at once and then it's 100. Yeah. So that's all going to change. And so as the coach, you can kind of ride the tailwind of that energy. And I think that's going to be a fun job. I think people are going to like that.
Yeah. I mean, just the idea that you get to reshape things is pretty interesting, I think, you know. And it just again, like, I guess you could talk to Joe Banner and Rob Jedzinski and Mike Lombardi about how that went in Cleveland, or how to Matt Rhule and Scott Fitter about how that went in Carolina.
Yeah.
But, you know, I do get the sense that, I mean, I will say this, like, I think the one thing that, like, Josh Harris and Mitch Rales and that group do have that maybe some of the other first-time owners didn't have, because he was an owner before, is just how to handle his employees and how to handle people. You know, I think too many of these new owners come in and they're guns blazing and they're treating their employees a certain way that just, like, creates a bad climate in the building. And they don't know how to, like, for example, like, and this has happened, both with Cleveland and the Browns, or with both Cleveland and Carolina. Sorry, this is a lack of sleep thing again. Not Cleveland and the Browns, Cleveland and Carolina. Like, you'd have the owner going to, like, the assistant offensive line coach and asking what was wrong. And then he would go and personally run that up to the head coach, and he thinks he's helping.
Right.
Like, that's not helping.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, and so, you know, I do think, like, the ownership with the Commanders, the learning curve isn't nearly as steep for the reasons, like, you know not to do those things.
Over under 1.5 drinks thrown in people's face by new Commanders owner Josh Harris, because that's the bar at this point. You know, I would take the under. Let's move on to New England, because it's turning out as funny as I hoped it would turn out. You know, for anyone, so my power ranking of what I thought Belichick was going to do based on his lifelong despise of the media was, I thought that he was going to say nothing at his post-game press conference, and then I thought he was going to prompt or trigger something that would result in his firing at like 3:30 in the morning, just so everyone would have to work all through the night and then chase him. He's done something funnier than that. He has come out on Monday morning and basically said, like, yeah, sure, I'll take a GM. And everyone's like, kind of, well, what's going on? And he's like, yeah, I'm just going to keep working here as long as I want. And, you know, I'm under contract. Here, the exact quote is, which is so great, yeah, I'm under contract. I'm going to do what I always do, which is every day I come in here and work as hard as I can to help the team in whatever way I can. So that's what I'm going to continue to do. So guess what that says? Hey, Robert, you have to fire me now or else. And it's on you, which is just so funny. It's so funny. Yeah.
I mean, and this has sort of been the way it's been trending for a while, too. Like, if you talk to people there, they'll tell you, you know, on Fridays he has these draft meetings with his scouts where they'll go over certain position groups. So one week it's the tight ends, the next week it's the corners in next year's class. And so he's having those meetings, like, as he usually would. He, you know, has had discussions about which coaches should get extensions, like, and as this stuff has been happening, I know for other people inside that building, it's like, Bill? So, but I think, like, that's, it sort of speaks, I mean, in a way, it, like, speaks to the discipline that he has for doing the job a certain way, but also I think it's, there's the whole passive aggressive thing, which is like, I'm going to adhere to my contract 100%. And I am upholding my part of this contract 100%. And if you are not going to uphold your end of the contract, well, then you owe me a lot of money and you have to let me go wherever I want.
Yes. It's so funny. It is. I mean, this is probably the funniest, with the next funniest being, I mean, I covered the Giants at the end of the Tom Coughlin era, and they had him, he gave a farewell press conference. The owner was standing at the base of the stage with his hand out to shake Tom Coughlin's hand. Coughlin did a 90-degree robot turn and blew past him like he was holding one of those free flyers on the street, or like trying to hand out a mixtape to someone. And Coughlin blew right past him, walked into his office, and then there was that nebulous period of time where we all knew that Ben McAdoo was getting the job. They kind of were like pitching him on this senior advisor thing. And while that was all being sorted out, he tells Ben McAdoo, don't change the signs. You're not allowed to change the signs. I put the signs up. Don't change the clocks, because Tom Coughlin had the clocks 5 minutes early for everything. And yep. Then and then he just kept using the gym, which is so
that
amazing.
That was the part that I was going to say. Like, I was wondering if you were going to bring
thing,
that up.
Just like, it's like grinding on the treadmill.
And the funny thing, the best part about it is like if you've actually been in the Giants facility, the gym is like
the epicenter of everything.
It's
windowless.
And it's encased in glass too, so you can't walk by. There's not walls, it's glass.
Yeah.
So if you walk by the gym, you can see everybody who's working out there. So as that was going on, I just had this image in my head of Ben McAdoo like showing up for work at like 5:30 in the morning, trying to get his program going, and like seeing Tom Coughlin already in there on the elliptical.
Just crushing like free weights, you know, or like... Just flying on the treadmill.
Just like the most awkward situation possible. Like, but yeah, like that was the part. I don't know why that's the part that like remains with me from that situation, but it was that like Ben McAdoo was showing up to work and Tom Coughlin was using the gym.
Imagine like buying a house and someone's like, I put up that wallpaper. You can't change the wallpaper. And by the way, I'm going to like make breakfast in your kitchen every morning. So I'm still going to be there. Just so you know. So the only other I want to play a quick game of word association here. We have openings now, and I just want to get your we'll kind of give each other's sort of rapid thoughts here, and then we'll move on because there's two kind of pressing items left over from some teams that you know, either didn't blow it or blow it from this past weekend. We'll get to a little bit of the games, and we'll talk about the playoff field, just very very cursory discussion. I know Matt and Gilberto will get into it on the Thursday show, but I'm just going to list the openings, and you and I are just going to just do a little coach association, and we'll see where it goes. So I'm going to start with the Chargers of Los Angeles. I'm saying, like right now, I'm saying it's Jim Harbaugh. What do you think?
Me too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would go Jim Harbaugh. I just think it's the perfect situation for him. It's California. He's got roots there. Coached at San Diego, coached at San Francisco, went to high school, I think, in Palo Alto, right? Like when his dad was coaching there. Family loves California. And it's a ready-made situation. He can come in and win right away. They've got a roster with like a closing window. Not closed, but a closing window. So they need to act with some urgency. I also get the sense that the Chargers are sensitive, A, to the perception that they're cheap.
Yes.
And B, the perception that they're irrelevant in LA.
Yes.
And hiring Jim Harbaugh would address both of those.
Solves a lot of problems. And yeah, I mean, I think it makes all the sense in the world. The only problem is if this is your plan A, you are at behest of the most unpredictable person in professional sports. We're taping this like, 9 hours before he's set to coach the national championship game. He could win and then sign a 10-year, $125 million contract with Michigan, which I heard, I know he's not entirely happy with. And so I think that there's, you know, there's a lot to be
I think sorted. It's also the NCAA, like he's sick of dealing with them. Obviously coaching in college is more complicated than it's been in the past. And, you know, I don't know that he's got the appetite to deal with the sanctions as they come over the next, you know, few months or years. And I mean, I think it's just sort of time for him to take his next shot. The other thing about it too, like when you talk about dealing with the unpredictability of Harbaugh, I sort of think the Chargers are set up for that too, right? Because they do have a blank slate. Like they do have a kind of a clean, they've got like a clean table there, so to speak, for him to build on. And like they're opening a new practice facility. The roster's getting a little older, so he can come in, do it his way. And if it doesn't work, you're going to be turning over the roster in a couple of years anyway,
right?
And you'll still have Justin Herbert to sell to another new coach. So I think the timing really sets up for this to happen.
All right, Las Vegas. They're very interesting to me because I get the impression that they are not in on a lot of the young guns, you know what I mean? And I think it's Harbaugh, Belichick, and if not, Antonio Pierce. Yeah. Like,
I think this is like similar to the way we talked about Atlanta, which is like swing for the fences. And if you don't connect, then you stick with what you have. The other thing is, I know, you know, the three players that Mark Davis has sort of leaned on, because he's not in the building day to day, but he is there for games and he does consult with the players, are Max Crosby, Josh Jacobs, and Devontae Adams. And it's at least my understanding that Antonio Pierce has the backing of those three, which I think goes a long way.
Yeah. That'll be an interesting job, though. I think that if there is anyone I, you know, if there was like a mutual attraction between Bill Belichick and any other owner, it would probably be Mark, just because Al is one of the founding fathers of the NFL. You know,
Al had a relationship with Bill too.
Yeah.
So like, and almost like thought about hiring him in 1999, which is actually like in an interesting way the backdrop for the Border War Part Two in 2000, because it was that negotiation, Belichick with the Raiders, which got the Jets to give him a raise and basically write into his contract that he'd be the next head coach.
Yeah.
Which led to Parcells walking away as fast as he possibly could. So Belichick would be forced to be the head coach and he couldn't go to New England.
Just so funny.
Yeah.
God, I love
that. Was before the Rooney rule. So you could actually write like succession plans into contracts and stuff.
So next we have Atlanta, and I think we're kind of in lockstep here. I mean, I think it's Belichick, it's Harbaugh, or like
I had to guess right now, I would say Belichick lands there.
I think like, so too. I think this is probably like, again, I think Harbaugh most likely Chargers. I think Pierce most likely Raiders. I think Belichick most likely Falcons. You got to be careful now, because I think you're starting to get into a situation where musical chairs go fast, and all of a sudden, you know, what's going to happen here if Bill goes somewhere else, if Bill gets offered $35 million a year to do television and finds that appetizing, wants to take a year off, and, you know, I don't know.
Yeah,
Bill,
I think one thing too, like that like shouldn't be undersold is geography for Bill. And I still think he'd rather be east than west.
Yeah.
He's
got a base in Nashville. Well, he grew up in Nashville.
Yeah, he's got a house in Nashville. Well, he grew up in Nashville, mostly Annapolis, but he was born in Nashville.
Right.
He's got a house in Nashville. He's got a house in Florida. Obviously got the place in Nantucket. So like a lot of his life is here, you know, and his kids, where do they go? Like I think that's part of this too, you know, and Steve Belichick's very close with Gerard Mayo. Say Steve Belichick stays in New England. Well, like, I think, you know, being close, being within an earshot of his kids is like important to him too. So I think there are a lot of things outside of just football that'll play into Bill's decision.
So, New England, let's do Washington first. Washington, I'm going to say, I would think that plan A is probably Ben Johnson. I would think that plan B might be Mike McDonald.
We have to disagree at some point, because I was going to say Ben Johnson too.
Yeah. I mean, I think they like Ben Johnson.
Yeah.
You know, and I think Ben would go there. I mean, that's one of those great jobs too, where, I mean, Ben's from Carolina, grew up there. And if you don't want the Panthers job, that's, you know, the DC area, you know, Virginia, you're pretty close, you know, you can make that trip, but it's drivable, if that means anything to you. I don't know if it does. And much less, you know, crazy in the owner box. A lot to like about that job.
I just like the one thing I would, with both Carolina and Washington, like, and I think Washington, I think you're right. Like, that Washington probably trends young here based on the way they're going to set things up. I don't know that you totally want to rule out at least a phone call being made on Mike Tomlin. And like the one thing that, you know, could kind of connect the dots here is that the owners in Carolina and Washington are both former Steelers minority owners. And so both Josh Harris and David Tepper have the relationship with the Rooneys where they can pick up the phone and call. And one thing that you hear pretty consistently is like, while Mike Tomlin's treated great with the Steelers, maybe he's not being paid at the top of the market. And he's from like the Tidewater region of Virginia, which is basically in between Charlotte and Washington, right? So, you know, like there's just like a lot of like, if this is the time, you know, and would those two be logical landing spots? Yes, right? And would those owners be owners that would bring him in because he'd give their, you know, ownership group credibility? Yes. So again, like I think Washington trends young, but I also believe they'd be remiss not to at least pick up the phone when the Steelers season ends and make sure that's not a possibility.
Yeah. By the way, the Commanders also, Anthony Weaver and Raheem Morris in their wave of coaching requests. Anthony Weaver is an interesting one. Has been on my list for a couple years. John Harbaugh, I think, said 2 years ago, and this past preseason, that this guy will be a head coach. So it'll be interesting to see if maybe he makes a little bit of some steam on the head coaching circuit. Let's just play. Let's say New England opens. I think Mike Vrabel.
Okay, I'm gonna go Jerod Mayo here. I do think like that the Crafts have a deep belief that Jerod Mayo is going to be a great head coach. Is he ready for that yet? I think that's the question. But his experience at this point isn't like significantly less as a coach than Vrabel's was when he got the Titans job, than D'Amico Ryan's was when he got the Texans job. It is less, but like not like massively so than Dan Campbell's was. But I think he sort of fits that, like that. He fits that mold of what a head coach. And there's now like a good track record of success, you know, for guys who have that background as players and haven't played in the league. And you know, I think that they probably, my guess would be that they go with Jerod Mayo, as they've sort of set this up over the last year. You know, when they convinced Jerod not to go and interview for the Carolina job. You know, but like, you know, like you, you know, you allude to Vrabel, it's like sort of similar to Washington, where it's like, you got to pick up the phone and ask and just see if Tennessee's willing to do something. Now, I don't know that Amy Adams Strunk would be willing to, cause she loves Vrabel, but you know, I do think it's worth at least making the phone call and asking if he'd be available.
Yeah.
And I would say this too, like the other thing is like, you know, we've been down this road before, and the Steelers, you know, in 2007 when they hired Tomlin, like everybody and their mother thought Russ Grimm or Ken Whisenhunt were getting that job, one or the other, right? Like that was the whole thing, and that had been spoken about for years at that point. And those were the leaders in the clubhouse, like, and I think they even admitted, like, you know, publicly that those guys were the leaders in the clubhouse, but they committed to going through a full process and wound up being blown away by Mike Tomlin, and obviously the rest is history. So you never know what can happen. And I would, you know, hope that the Crafts would at least like give it a go, even if they intend to hire Mayo in the end.
This is going to be fun. Did I miss any?
Carolina.
Oh, Carolina. So, I mean, here's my read on the situation. My thought is that if you're David Tepper, you're in a bit of a pickle after you threw that. What do you think that was? What do you think he was drinking? Like a brandy?
You think? Yeah, probably some sort of scotch, right?
Like a brown. It looked like a brown.
I don't
liquor.
Think it's like a vodka soda.
Well, it was definitely dark. Like it was.
Was it dark? It was so dark. I didn't see the color. Actual liquid. Okay.
Could be like a Jack and Ginger.
A bourbon?
Maybe a bourbon. Yeah. Like you wouldn't drink it out of a plastic cup, though. You know. Like, I feel like if I was an owner and I was going to drink bourbon, I would bring, like, a nice rocks glass into the suite, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
I don't know.
You would think they'd be available to you in the suite when you got in there, right?
Maybe it's a Diet Coke. I don't know. But anyway, you're in a bit of a pickle from an optical perspective. You certainly got a large dose of what everyone thought of you after you did that. And so you have to win. There's no way you can't win this head coaching cycle. And to me, that means bringing Ben Johnson home. Like, you know, you have to. And I think he will go to extraordinary lengths to make it happen. I don't know if he will do it, but I think he will.
I know people inside that building feel like that's like what he's going to do is he's just going to hand a blank check to Ben Johnson. One thing I have heard from people who have talked to him that are outside that building is that like the one area where he's learned his lesson on this is he's not going to try to just check one box. He's going to try to check 10. And maybe that leads him to Ben Johnson anyway, but he is going to look to check more boxes than he did the last couple of times. Last time, obviously, he wanted an offensive guy, a quarterbacks guy, and wound up hiring one in Frank Reich. I'm also not sure that Ben Johnson trusts David Tepper. And I think that was part of pulling his name out last year. So I'm going to go with Dan Quinn here.
Ooh.
And like I just think I think from a leadership standpoint, as far as just getting the environment where it needs to be in the building, like that's sort of Dan Quinn's specialty. And I do think, like, look, if I think if Quinn had his druthers, he might rather be in the West Coast. You know, he's got a base in Hawaii. So, like, the Chargers, like, I think would make some sense for Quinn if the Chargers swing and miss on Harbaugh. Seattle, if Pete Carroll were to reverse course and decide that he wants to walk away. You know, I think a lot of people have sort of felt like, you know, Dan Quinn would be the natural successor to Pete Carroll in Seattle. But can he wait another year? And if Dallas advances in the playoffs and Mike McCarthy is safe, you know, does he need to take his swing now? And so Carolina, I think, is one that would make some sense for him. And I think would give the and I think Quinn would give the Panthers a lot of what they need, which, you know, I think is much larger than just being able to develop a quarterback or call an offense.
I think, I think that Cowboys job is going to open. I have a weird feeling that Cowboys job is going to open. I don't know. I think there could be one more. I mean, outside of New England, right? And then if Vrabel leaves, you have the kind of that ricochet effect of the Titans opening. Yeah. But I think that between Dallas and Tampa, I think we got one more in us somewhere. Like if Tampa gets their doors blown off by the Eagles in the playoffs,
right? Like I would keep an eye on Jacksonville. I don't think they're going to make a change. Like, Doug's not getting fired, in other words. But, like, is it possible? And Doug's so loyal to his assistants. Is it possible that the front office says, well, we'd really like you to make a change here or here or here? And he balks at that. Like, I don't think it's, like, the craziest thing in the world to think that sort of scenario could play out. I don't think it's likely, but I would just kind of keep an eye on potential like staff changes underneath Doug in Jacksonville and whether or not those sorts of changes could affect his own standing there or his own willingness to be there.
I'll give you one. A candidate that, I have a robust list to pick from. I think there was only 96 names on here. And the guy that I'm about to give you was not on the list in September, which is like, it's killing me. I really, like, this happens every year. I do a head coaching
list. So it's like a wild card candidate?
Yeah, this happens every year. I do a massive list mostly with, you know, like, there's like, you know, 10 offensive guys, 10 defensive guys, and then, you know, a lot of assistants, you know, low-level guys that will be in the conversation 3 years from now. This guy was not on the list, and I felt so bad about it. You know, we're going to have something fun come out about him before the playoffs, but Dave Canales from Tampa, I think that is, if you're looking for someone who, and I'm not, I'm not saying, but just for the NFL fan base in general, the casual NFL fan is going to be like, wait, who? Offensive coordinator for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Really interesting. You go back to and you look at his path.
He's like a guy who's come up like quote unquote the right way too. You know what I mean? Like where he did bide his time and it did take him a while to rise to the Seahawks organization. And it did take some time for him to become an offensive coordinator. And so like he's
42,
I guess battle tested would be the right way to put it. Yeah. Right.
And if you look at his resume and you overlay it, spent a lot of time in Seattle. He was with Pete Carroll at USC, moved with him to Seattle. Rose through the ranks there, quality control, all that, was in the receiver room at the time where they had all these really good receivers, Doug Baldwin, Jerome Kearse, Tyler Lockett. Then all of a sudden moves over to the quarterback room and, you know, Russell Wilson starts having some much better seasons. Then moves to passing game coordinator. Russell Wilson has his best season. Then moves back to quarterback's coach when Shane Waldron comes. Geno Smith wins comeback player of the year. Now you're in Tampa with Baker Mayfield in a job that I know for a fact people turned down because they were scared of having to work with Baker Mayfield. And now you got the Bucs in the playoffs. Just saying. He is one of those guys that I think, you know, if things especially start to get nuts and pinball around, I'm like, okay, that's a guy. I don't know. What do you think? You have anybody else you think is going to surprise
you? A wild card?
Yeah. Give me a wild card.
You want me to give you a fun one?
Yes.
Lincoln Riley.
Yes. That's what I'm talking about, baby. Woo! Wherever Caleb Williams goes?
I just, like, he... So, like, it's been a couple of years now, but a couple of years ago, everybody wanted a piece of Lincoln Riley.
Remember we all thought he was going to Dallas?
Yeah, and so, like, there's been this, like, kind of... I feel like that's cooled off a little bit, but I don't think the USC job has been as maybe, like, I don't know if the USC job has been exactly what he expected, and things have gotten, like, a lot more complicated at the college level,
yeah.
Right? Like, where you have NIL and you have the transfer portal, and I think you're going to see this, like, I think you're going to see over the next few years, like, more guys who are just worn out by everything in the college football looking to get to the NFL. You know, I think it's really interesting to think of the idea of somebody like Lincoln Riley. Like, if the Chargers offered him their job, would he take it? I mean, if you're going to take your shot at the NFL, do it with Justin Herbert, you know? So I just think he's somebody who you just want to kind of keep an eye on. And I don't think he's the only one at the college level either. But, you know, it's I think because of all the complications in the college football and how hard it's become and, like, you know, again, NIL, the trans, I mean, it is the Wild West. And those jobs are really, really, like, have become more complicated and more, like, just labor intensive as far as the hours you're working. I just, like, I'm saying Lincoln Riley, but I think it's sort of it's indicative of how I think you're going to see more college coaches trying to get to the pros, to the point where maybe at some point we even see, like, guys leaving head coaching jobs to take coordinator jobs in the NFL. Wow. You know, like, I don't think things like that happening are off the board now just because of the climate in college football being so upside down.
Deion Sanders to the Bears. Get ready!
To run the defense.
My only lingering takeaway from Sunday, Albert, was that you alluded to it a little bit. Spend a minute on the Jaguars. I extremely disappointing. You know, yep. I think to have Trevor Lawrence for, I believe, 16 of your 18 games, the AFC was out on Deshaun Watson. Justin Herbert, Deshaun Watson, Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson. Russell's not really that good anymore, but let's see. Who else was out for the season in the AFC at quarterback?
The AFC, wait. So he started Deshaun Watson, Russell, who else?
Deshaun Watson, Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, Justin Herbert. Joe Burrow. My God. And then you can't back into the playoffs. I still can't get it out of my head. I texted Richard Johnson, who is our...
Mac Jones.
Bailey Zappi. I texted Richard Johnson, who's our excellent college football reporter, and you guys should be following him because the national championship game and all that, and the college football coaching carousel, he's very plugged in. But he's also a lifelong Jaguars fan, and I told him, what was that play call on third and goal right before... And everyone's like, I can't believe Trevor Lawrence audible to the quarterback sneak and then didn't get in. I can, because did you see what was called for him on third and goal? It was a sprint out with no play action, and you're in a run-heavy formation, and most of your best receivers stayed in to block. The only people that went out to catch a pass were ETN and Luke Farrell. Luke Farrell, right? That's his name? Ohio State Buckeye, right?
That's right.
That, you know, that was terrible. And I think that there's going to be some hard, again,
and that's,
you mentioned it. Doug Peterson does not like changing staffs. That's what happened in Philly. You had that weird blend of, like, the year before he left when they brought in all these consultants from all these different offenses and everybody was mad and, you know, Carson Wentz looked worse than ever. You hope that doesn't happen, but something's got to change. I mean, that is as close to inexcusable as it gets, you know?
And if you're one of the people in Jacksonville who wants change, like, the end of that game kind of gives you the thing that you can point at to say, this is why there should be change. So, again, not saying it's 100% going to happen, but, you know, look, like, they've got to make a decision on Trevor Lawrence's contract this offseason whether or not to extend him. I think, you know, it's obviously academic, the idea that they'll pick up the option. That's easy. But, and, you know, like, ask hard questions, like, about whether or not you're getting the most out of him. Because I thought, like, personally, after last year, this was the year that Trevor Lawrence was going to ascend into the top five players at his position in the league. And I think, you know, based on where he was year one versus year two and some of the momentum he had coming into this year and that big comeback they had in the playoffs last year against against the Chargers and the way that they, you know, like put up a fight against the Chiefs, like this was the, and then early this year, they showed signs that that was happening.
Yeah.
And it just, you know, like it just didn't come together at the end of the year the way that we all expected it to. So it's, I think it's fair to ask big picture questions. And look, there's nothing more important than the development of your young quarterback. And if you feel like that's in a weird spot, then you have to ask those questions.
Just a parting thought here. Aaron Rodgers gave a press conference while we were taping this and said, you know what needs to change with the Jets? All this BS going on outside the building that isn't about football.
Good luck with that.
Said by Aaron Rodgers with no hint of irony.
All the BS that goes on outside of this building is the Jets, buddy.
All the BS that goes outside the building is the what you say, the Pat, what you say on the Pat McAfee show.
Yeah.
Free advertisement for that guy, by the way. Anyway. Thanks, Albert, as always.
Should we go to Jimmy Kimmel for comment on that?
Oh my God. This is the death of sports discourse. This is the one last podcast that's just going to talk about football. Be sure to catch Matt and Gilberto on Thursday. They do a great job as always. For Albert, I'm Connor Orr, and, we're signing off. We'll see you guys next week to talk playoffs. Let's go.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
This country was built on a distinctly American work ethic. But today, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries, sending away good jobs and diminishing our capability to make things. American Giant is pushing back against that tide. They make the kind of high-quality clothing staples you need for a comfortable, stylish, and active summer wardrobe. Like vintage-style tees, tough tank tops, breathable polos, lightweight sweatshirts, shorts, and so much more. All made right here in the USA. From growing the cotton to adding the final touches. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs for seamsters, cutters, and factory workers in towns and cities across the United States. And it's about more than an income. Jobs bring pride, purpose. They stitch people together. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.